The next case is 96-2127, Lucky Collins versus Mark J. Sotka and Kathleen Dudrich. Mr. Rockmuhl.
May it please the court. My name is Wes Evan Rockmuhl, representing the Health of Lucky Collins, administrator of the state of Maine, along with the chief. I'd like to reserve the ministry for the question.
Watch your time there.
There are two issues before this court today in the present action. The first issue is whether the discovery rule controls revised code section 2125.02G, which states that a wrongful death action must be commenced within 2 years of the date of death, and whether 2125.02G also violates some enforcement provision. It is the Collins' contention that there are two avenues in which this court could hold that the discovery rule can control 2125.02G. Quarters Corporation, which was issued by this court in 1991, which states that neither fraud nor discovery rules can toll the running of the statute of limitations as applies to wrongful death actions. The second is that as a case of first impression, this court can hold that enforcement in a wrongful death case is predicated on homicide, that discovery rule would be effective.
I think we can all agree that a fault is 92. The body was found shooting dead. Whatever date she died between 7:31 and 7:14, that was the day he really knew that there was a death, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And even before that, this gentleman, Sotka, is that how you say his name?
Sotka.
Sotka was here, she had a suspicion for death even before that.
That's not completely true, Your Honor.
Well, he was under suspicion. Well, since you aren't willing to admit that, let's move forward. As of 1/4/93, the indictment came down naming him.
It's labeled secret, and there's nothing in the record to indicate when it was unveiled as a public document.
When did Lucky Collins first learn that the indictment had come down?
I do not know of an exact date of when it came down.
By at least by 2/5/93, when he entered the plea of guilty, we then conclusively knew he was guilty.
Yes, and furthermore, where the murder took place and there would be another defendant.
Okay. So you have, if you take the date that the body was found as the date of death, the last possible date of death, and all that came down, then you would still have had to 12/15/94, which is almost 2 years after the plea of guilty was filed.
That's true, Your Honor, but the problem is while you had the body, you didn't have the proof.
Well, you had a plea of guilty in 2/5/93. That's almost a good year and a half before the statute that runs. You take it from the date of the body being found.
Well, but it's Pell's intention that not just having the body, but knowing who is when the clock should start running.
So knew who on 2/5/93.
Correct.
And you can't tell me in those 18 months this client could have found a lawyer and filed against this gentleman who she knew by 2/5/93
Well, you could have, Your Honor.
Now, I can see situations where there are inequities where the body is found, or, you know, the defendant is named for 2 years after the date. But in this case, you know, you're asking us to make law in a case where it was very possible in a long period of time to file a statute of limitations. We're not running up against any deadline.
Well, Collins, that in section 2/5/93, the last event necessary existed, the who. And so he thought he had, it was his belief, contention, that he had 2 years from that date to file as the statute says.
despite the fact that there's a case law out there that says otherwise? Why would you take that position? Why did an attorney advise you that position?
I don't think I need to advise you to proceed for a second. You know, it's funny, in Schober, there's a discussion of, it's just a totally different areas in which we apply discovery rules. There's legal malpractice, there's insurance issues, there's fraud. And in Burke v. Scott County Board of Commissioners, the court said that the clock effectively begins running, discovery rules hold the statute from running until the fraud and wrongdoer. If we have a murder case, and what we're saying is that, well, he has a body, that was enough. I think a murder case is much more egregious than a fraud. I don't think we'll have any dispute on that. And that coupling of those two facts, the who, and the fact that there was a murder, because even without the body, I mean, I can see what we said as well, continuing to lose death. But even then, there could have been an issue, though, they could pronounce her dead that day. There might be more time before it was determined that death was wrongful. It's not just the death that's determined the statute, it's the death has to be wrongful.
Mr. Rockmill, the Schober case was decided in 1991. Is that correct by this court?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the General Assembly has had an opportunity to amend 212502. In fact, they have apparently done some work on it since then and didn't change the very clear language that says that you know, an action for wrongful death shall be commenced within 2 years after the decedent's death. The General Assembly that sets the policy of the law certainly had an opportunity to respond to Schober, didn't they, as you and Judge Ford would like the General Assembly to respond. Why do we change the law when the General Assembly is the writer of the laws and hasn't done, they've had plenty of time to do it?
Well, that is true, Your Honor, I will not quibble over that. But just because they haven't done something doesn't even mean that they consider it. This statute says 2 years from the date of death. That, to me, that presumes that you have a known date of death. In this case, we're saying that, okay, we know by 12/15/92 there was a date of death. They didn't even anticipate it here in their own language that the date of death is unknown and never conclusively established. In that case, this exists.
Well, how does that affect your case? I thought your case, the date of death is known, isn't it?
No, it's not, Your Honor.
Date of death is not known?
No. There was never a scientific conclusion. There were two death certificates. Well, the first one said unknown. The second one said July 31st, 1992, and that was issued upon the request of Angel Wolfman's parents. That was the last day they saw her alive.
Based upon his confession as well, wasn't it? Didn't he confess he killed her the same day?
They did not pick that based upon his confession.
But he did say he killed her on that day.
He did say that, yes, but we would submit that how much credibility does confess murder have?
Well, some, maybe. we have a statute that, you know, that we have to apply, and it seems to me we can take, you know, some note of it.
And from the record of the autopsy, there was gross decomposition, skeletonization, so there was never any scientific finding of the exact date of death. So the best that we do know is, it's already been discussed, that 12/15/92, the body was found in Perry Township by hunters.
You don't even concede that the date specified in the indictment would be a conclusive date of death?
No, I'm not.
What would be a conclusive date of death in your mind in a case such as this?
I don't know that we can ever say. I mean, the only conclusive...
So this statute doesn't really mean anything. We can't really apply this statute because we don't know when anybody dies, for sure. Right? Is that?
Well, that's a.
No, that's a. I'm extending too far what you're saying. Okay, what are you saying?
For purposes of argument, the only fact we know for sure is that death occurred between 7/31 and 12/15. We don't know when it occurred. It could have occurred on any of those days. The statute says 2 years from the date of death. We don't know the date of death. I mean, that is true.
The most liberal interpretation we could give you to 12/15 and 95.
Yeah, that's.
Upon the finding of the body. But again, it's Appellant's contention that in a fraud case, you're going to say you need the fraud and the actual wrongdoer, that we can't do this in a murder case.
You're saying that the date of death is not an issue, it's when you figure out Who killed that person?
I'm saying they worked together, Your Honor. It's not enough just to know that there's a death. If you don't know who, you can't bring your cause of action. If you bring a John Doe, you only have 1 year to determine if John Doe is in statute, give you 2 years, as it is. You know, and Helen's free.
I would be more with you if they discovered this guy 2 years later, but they discovered him within a month. I guess the equities of your argument, maybe this is a bad case to make the state law, but you had a long period after he confessed to still file. That's what I've been struggling with here.
Well, I understand that, Your Honor. And again, like I said, it was Mr. Collins' belief that when he had those two interlocking things, the body and the fact that it was wrongful, and who?
And he filed the original case pro se?
Yes, he did. I was brought in right before they left the district. So he proceeded in the trial.
Maybe he had malpractice action, otherwise he's pro se and we're not.
No, that's right. Did not do that. In appellant's brief, we discussed some other jurisdictions that have dealt with these issues. There's 12 jurisdictions that not predicated on homicide do toll statute of limitation on discovery. Two jurisdictions that have dealt with wrongful death cases that are predicated on homicide. One of them is Washington State, which was the case Allen v. Washington, whereby a gentleman was murdered in 1978. They didn't find out until 1982 who had done the murder, and it was two felons that were released early on parole. And though the family moved out, they didn't tell the mother. Washington uses a 3-year statute of limitations on their wrongful death. So in May of 1982, the court said she knew who to sue. And it wasn't the felon she was suing, she was going after the state for wrongful release on parole, so these two felons committed murder. She didn't file until 1985, October, and they said she didn't use due diligence. It had come out in the newspapers that the gentleman had been convicted, and her family wants to move out of it because they weren't upset or they didn't help. So there's an example of where it works. And it is held a position that in this case, due diligence was used. Again, it was wrongful death and finding out who. Remember, it's not just Mark Saki, it is the defendant, Kathy Duch, who's also an athlete in this case, obviously. And it wasn't until the confession that it became clear where the murder took place. And that was in her form of a vacant home that she owns. Utah is going farther than Washington. We originally started out with the premise that the discovery will toll the statute of limitations until the last event necessary to make the cause of action exist. Then in Warren v. Provo City Corporation, 1982, they extended this even further. They said the statute will be told where it's mandated by statute, where there's fraudulent concealment, or an exceptional circumstances case. In that case, there was a case, Howard v. Canada, 1993, 10th Circuit applying Utah law, said it was not unreasonable where a defendant was acquitted in a murder trial and then later admitted 10 years later in a book that a person would not bring a wrongful death claim until they knew that fact. I think this situation is analogous. It's the same thing. Nothing was brought until all the facts were available to the cops. Again, it's a 2-year trial.
Let's go through it in depth, because obviously you know what I think about Schover. I think it's maybe the worst case ever to come out of this court. And I think I said that in the dissent, where we're willing to say in a syllabus that even fraud perpetrated can be excused. But that's not, do you really need to overrule Schover in this case?
No, you don't, Your Honor.
Well, but that seems to be what you're arguing, and of course, I'm prepared to do that. But here, all we have to do is fit it in the time frame when you had full knowledge, and that would be maybe even sentencing, but certainly his confession. But even his confession wouldn't be good until he was sentenced on the plea. So that was February 5, 1993. The suit was filed February 6, 1995. So it was in the two, yeah, it was in the two, within the 2 years.
Absolutely.
So that doesn't, Schober doesn't impact on that if we find that the operative date, cognizable event, if you will, is February 5, 1993.
Absolutely, I do believe that you can distinguish this from Schober. Obviously, I would like, if you do, see Schober overturned, but it's not necessary.
Yeah, but see, you spent so much time in this argument with regard to this that we have a clear statute to apply. The issue is not really the statute being applied here, because 2 years you fall within if you take the date when you really knew that he was the one. You don't really know that until he's sentenced.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, the case would have been different, would it not? Would your position have been different had the suit been filed on the 8th in 1995, February 8th? Or would you lose?
That would depend if the operative event is the sentencing or the confession.
Well, make it the operative, the sentencing. February 5, 1993 was the when he entered the plea of guilty. So February 10, 1995, you file the suit, that'd be too late.
Yes,
all right. Because of the 2 year statute of limitations in 21-2502D? Or because this is also a personal injury and you still only have a 2 year statute of limitations? Okay.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Rugmail. Mr. Williams.
Counsel, now,
yes.
I play devil's advocate with the other side a little bit. Let me do the opposite with you. He doesn't have the best fact pattern to change the statute, but we have to make our decisions based on the impact on future cases. Well, we can't make a rule that fits all circumstances. Let's say we all agree that by at least 12:15 she was dead, but don't discover the murderer in 4 years. Are you in a position that she's simply out?
I would argue that, Your Honor, and for a couple of reasons. Number one, as Barack and I talked about some other jurisdictions, and they substantially there was one of due diligence. And if we look at, we don't have that standard here, because I would certainly argue to this bench that you have to follow the law as indicated in the Schober versus Cordes case. The law is clear in terms of that the cognizable event is the death as it's set forth in the statute.
So would you disagree? You think we would have to overrule Schober versus Cordes because it states that death is the triggering event that case does?
I would argue that there is no reason to overrule Schober versus Cordes. I think that this court, not this particular convention in its entirety, but this court reviewed many of the issues that are in this particular case before you this morning in the Schober case, and I'm quite familiar with Justice Douglas' dissent as well as Justice Sweeney's dissent, but I don't believe that the facts are any different. In fact, in reference to Schober, there was actually fraud perpetrated by the defendant in that case. It was a different situation, I believe, because that woman unfortunately passed away from what appeared to be a heart attack with no other indication as to any other cause of death. In this particular case, certainly once the body was discovered, there was no question that a murder had been committed. And at that particular time, there wasn't a situation where everything was hidden from the potential plaintiffs in this particular case. I think the court has reviewed the legislative intent on the wrongful death statute. They did that in the Schober case. Nothing has transpired, I believe, or would argue to this court in the 6 years since that time. Many of those issues in reference to fraud were addressed by the court in the Schober case. Many of the questions in reference to other, shall we say, disabilities or torn statutes under other statutes looked at and addressed in the Schober case.
in this particular case, certainly on behalf of my particular client, Kathleen Gudich, in this case, we're talking that there is no evidence at all that she had fraudulently concealed in any way any potential liability or any potential actions on her part. The claim against her arises under a statute in reference to the fact that a crime was committed at her home or piece of real estate that she owned. Even under that criteria, it's necessary to establish gross negligence against her. There was no indication at all in this particular case that Ms. Dudich had anything to do at all with this unfortunate occurrence. But again, Justice Cook, I would argue that there is no need to overturn Chover. I would say that it is still the law in this jurisdiction. As Justice Blair has indicated, there has been a apparent passage of time. Certainly the General Assembly has looked at this statute and other aspects and has chosen not to make any exceptions to the tolling of the statute of limitations. It still reads the fact that death is the operative event, and it would be my argument to this bench that at the very least that operative event was identified in December 1992. I think that the claim that one can extend the statute to where we have a situation of someone pleading guilty, as Mr. Sotka did, I think is far beyond what the legislative intent was in this particular case. And certainly I think too that a lot is, there are some public policy arguments that we can see in reference, as you indicated, Justice Stratton, with regard to some of these types of situations. And certainly I am here on behalf of Ms. Dudich, and I think there are some public policy arguments also in reference to defendants such as her in situations such as this and some of the unfairness that is worked when one does extend the statute of limitations in a situation like this. I think, again, there is some talk about some jurisdictions aside from Ohio. Certainly, I think that even in those jurisdictions, the Washington case that was cited by Mr. Rockwell, as well as that one in Utah, we still talk about due diligence. Due diligence in this case certainly is an opportunity to file, if necessary, a John Doe action. Certainly Mr. Sotka was charged, arrested and charged prior to the time he pled guilty. There would have been an opportunity certainly to name him within that two-year period. Also possibly the name of John Doe if there was some indication by due diligence that another individual was involved, as possibly the allegations are involving Ms. Dudich. I think that the situation has not changed in the 6 years. Chover is still the good law in this jurisdiction. Mr. Rockwell raises some issues about a violation of the Constitution in reference to the open courts provision. I think that this court has indicated that certainly the acts of the General Assembly are presumed to be legitimate and valid. If there is any doubt, that that doubt should be resolved in constitutional favor. Favor constitutionality, and certainly I think in this particular case there is no violation of the open courts provision. The statute is there, and the legislative intent is there. This court has ruled that in Chover, and I would urge you to keep that as the law of this jurisdiction. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Mr. Rockmuley, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds if you'd like.
Thank you.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.